Getting there on time just isn't good enough. Traffic and weather on the 10s with Wills and Snyder in the morning on WTAM 1100, Cleveland's News Radio.
Big game week, and our buddy Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News. Wills, ways to save checks in. Hope you had a good weekend, by the way. Good morning.
Couldn't go wrong. I've been waiting for Monday.
You're that guy. Either you have an air fryer, you've been at a friend's house and they've used one of these air fryers, you've been thinking about one. These things are awfully popular, aren't they?
Trending. I can't even tell you how many requests I collected from Will's Ways to Save listeners. I cannot even tell you how unprepared I was for the number of air fryers on the market that are complete garbage. And also the great ones. And if anyone is listening right now and you don't know what this allows you to prepare a variety of dishes from crispy fries to juicy wings, fish sticks, whatever it is, all of your favorite fried foods in a healthier way with little to absolutely no oil. Cutting down on fat.
A part of your research, if you go to WTAM.com, keyword save, see the video that you put together. You sent one. You found a couple of good ones. You sent what you thought was the best to be tested, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the wonderful folks listening right now know that I work for Google and YouTube. And in New York City, we actually share a studio with or beside Food Network Food TV. So they're from Rachel Ray to many other celebrity chefs. I have access to a lot of people walking through who will test an item for me if I ask really nicely.
Right.
And one of my favorite TV chefs you've seen, he did a great job. I sent him 11 different air fryers. And there was one that stood out called GoWise USA. Obviously, they're not paying us to talk about them, but it uses a rapid air circulation technology. So it cooks your foods, fries your favorite foods by circulating hot air in all directions. It gets record cooking time. It's super easy with the presets. And I'm telling you, the sweet potato fries that he made me out of here, some of the wings, some of these really, really nice, like gourmet chicken fingers, cornflake crust, 10,000 times better than what you would deep fry with the exact same flavor, more moist. I mean, you can do everything from steak to salmon in here. It has a recipe book and a price down from over $150 to $69 today. Two models.
Wow.
You want to get one a little bit larger, you can. These kind of look like they're made by Apple. They're very sleek looking. You get your choice of colors. And I got the whole video, the unboxing, and the demo on WTAM.com. Keyword safe.
Been thinking about one. Granite found the best and got a good deal for you. Watch him on Channel 3 News this morning. Back here same time tomorrow when he's got you set up for home security on a pretty cheap price. Watch him on 3 this morning. Back here same time tomorrow. WTAM.com. Keyword safe for Matt Granite. Thanks, partner.
Awesome.
You get Mike Snyder Sports Mornings at 15 and 45 past. A rare Sunday evening Cavs game. Right?
Yeah, Sunday evening, and maybe we got to play more on Sunday night, Bill. The Cavaliers played pretty well last night, although it was not easy against a struggling, injury-riddled Detroit team. Cavaliers' defensive woes showed up in the first half. They allowed 61 points to the Pistons and trailed by three. But Isaiah Thomas had an excellent third quarter that pushed the Cavs to a three-point lead into the fourth. And then with Isaiah actually on the bench and LeBron leading the way, the Cavs pulled away in the fourth.
Love rebounds. He'll kick off by LeBron James. James, the foul line, down the lane, off to Smith. Three on the way. He nails it. Cavaliers 111, Pistons 102 with under three to go.
And that one really sealed it. Cavaliers go on to take a 121-104 win. LeBron with 25 points, 14 assists, and 8 rebounds, and only 3 turnovers after having 11 the other night. Kevin Love with a 20-point, 11-rebound game. Coach Lou, what did you see?
You know, holding 17 points in the fourth quarter, obviously, but only holding the 4 threes in that second half was good for us. And then offensively, I thought we played the right way. We shared the basketball. We played with pace. We moved the ball. So, it was a good win for us.
Yeah, it was. The Cavs holding a team to 17 points in a quarter. That's what they did in the fourth last night. Now, Isaiah Thomas had his best minutes yet as a Cav. That really came in the third quarter. He sparked a third quarter rally after the Cavs had fallen behind by 5. And by the end of the third, they were leading by 4. He finished the day with 14 points and 7 assists. But it was interesting. Coach Lou then went the fourth quarter without Isaiah on the floor. And LeBron really ran the point. It all worked last night. Cavs are now 29-19, and they get a rematch with the Pistons tomorrow night in Detroit in an 8 o'clock tip. Football yesterday, well, the Pro Bowl was conducted in Orlando, Florida.
First and 10 at the 18, Carr to throw, right side, caught, touchdown! Backing into the end zone for 6. and a chance to take the lead. Delaney Walker, with his second touchdown catch of this Pro Bowl, has tied it at 23 with 1:31 to play.
And the point after was good, and Delaney Walker helping the AFC rally from a 20-3 halftime deficit to win the Pro Bowl 24-23. Not a bad game as Pro Bowls go. Now the countdown is on to the game that will be this Sunday night in Minneapolis. Eagles have landed in Minnesota. Patriots will arrive today, and the countdown for Super Bowl 52 begins with a Sunday evening kickoff. Golf, still no winner in the Farmers Insurance Open as Jason Day and Alex Noren will meet in a playoff today, but maybe there really is a winner. Tiger Woods, he finished the tournament 3 under par, felt good about it, something for him to build on. Coming up, something to build on for Isaiah Thomas was his play in the third quarter last night. We'll hear from him about that at 5:45. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100.
Bill Zemper with me this morning. Let's talk flu. Bill, good morning. There's a report, and I think I saw this last night, the CDC, by this time of the year, traditionally, it starts to wane, I guess, not this year, though?
Yeah, this is normally our peak time, and we begin to see things back off a little bit. But no sign that that's going to happen anytime soon, Bill. In fact, they now say this flu season will be the worst since the 2009 swine flu pandemic. And we expect that it will go for a while before we see anything tapering off. 3 weeks straight now, 49 states, with the exception of Hawaii, have reported widespread flu activity, and it is on the increase. So give you an idea. For the state of Ohio, Bill, In the 5-year average we look at, this time of the year, late January, early February, you get anywhere from 200 to 300 hospitalizations because of the flu. This year, 1,700.
Wow. 37 kids have died around the country. You and I both got shots, knock on wood. We haven't had it yet. But from what I've read, there's even other strains that maybe would affect us even if we got a shot.
Yeah, well, even if you got the shot that is targeting the H3N2 virus, they say that virus may have mutated a little bit and it might not be totally effective. However, they say that the flu shot could lessen the effects of the flu if you do get it, and there is still time. Normally, this time of year, nobody's talking about getting a flu shot because the flu season is beginning to wane a little bit, but they say you can still get the flu shot. You might have a problem finding it in some areas, however, because a lot of doctors and pharmacies simply are out of their supply and normally don't give flu shots this time of year, but you still can get your flu shot.
Keep washing your hands, and if you get it, stay away. Stay home, right?
You got it.
Bill Zemper on the flu story. Bill, thanks.
You're welcome, Bill.
525 at News Radio, WTAM 1100. Sadly, funerals over the weekend. Kentucky, after the most recent school mass shooting. Our crime terrorism analyst, Brad Garrett, on that story this morning. Brad, you know, I look back over the weekend, I sadly almost forgot that indeed there was another school shooting last week, Western Kentucky, you know?
You're thinking 11 versions of school shooting since the beginning of the year, and what are we? We're not through January yet.
Wow.
There are some form of a mass shooting every day in the United States someplace. Not necessarily schools, obviously. But it is something that we are concerned about, but we don't really want to sort of tackle it in any sort of tangible or collective way, and that's the issue.
We normally go back, look at the basics. Security, it's a school, who had what, who could go where. This looked like an open area as this thing played out in Western Kentucky. You know, you always debate, is this the price of freedom sometimes, Brent?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes. However, do we just sort of sit back and watch these number of shootings go day in and day out? I think we, you know, common sense, Second Amendment staying right up there in the front. I firmly believe in it, firearms, et cetera. But we just have to be able to be more accountable about who has firearms. In other words, you know, we don't do universal background checks. I know some people don't like that, and it's not perfect.
Right.
How well do we enforce domestic violence or domestic situations where people shouldn't have weapons during this period of time they're under supervision? Should kids be able to buy guns before 21? Are weapons actually safely stored in houses? I don't know where this 15-year-old got his guns. Most of the time, they get their guns from home. How well are they secured? How easily can they go get them? You know, it goes on and on, Bill. But the point being, we don't really want to stick to a plan that could reduce some of these shootings. Like schools having threat assessment teams. These are lay people in the school. The police officers assigned there, the principal, other people. to talk and work with troubled kids, because a lot of these mass shooters may not have ended up being mass shooters.
Brad, sadly, and you know this from working in the media, it depends on the news cycle, how where a story like this is slotted, sadly. You know, some days, if it's right. a slow day, this would have been the lead, if you will. And I mention that because, look, there are so many issues. In public health, the opioid epidemic, school shootings, you almost have to slot these things someday in Washington as well, you know?
Why? And to go back to my numb term, Bill, this sort of affects us other than school shootings. We are now so bombarded with stuff that we sort of shut it out and say, I got to get through my life. I got to take my kids to school, whatever it might be. And it really is tough to sort of focus and go, this is really a big problem. Like opioids, now people are like getting it.
Right.
Like, and we're starting to sort of do some things that we should to help reduce that.
Good point. All right, Brad Garrett on it this morning. Thanks, Brad.
Take care, Bill.
News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills on your money and health care, the topic. Jordan Goodman joins me at moneyanswers.com. Jordan, so much talk in Washington about what health care is or will look like in this country. Meanwhile, I got bills to pay every day on the front lines. You got a tip here for us?
Well, there's a major change that just happened here. It was part of the tax bill that was enacted at the end of last year. The mandate to buy health insurance went away. So that means the Congressional Budget Office is assuming something like 13 million Americans will drop health insurance because they can't afford the premiums anymore. Well, mm-hmm. that's nice, but what happens if they have health care bills when there's no insurance company behind you? What they need to do, if people have health care bills, there are these health care advocacy organizations that can help you negotiate down these bills to 10, 20, 30 cents of the dollar, depending on how it all works out. This is not something the average individual can do. This is something these people have been doing for many, many years. My favorite place is called Healthcare Advocates, and their website is healthcareadvocates.com. Their phone number, 215-735-7711. So they've been doing this for about 30 years. They negotiate with the CFOs at hospitals and doctor companies. And otherwise, you get turned over to collection agencies. It can be kind of brutal.
Sure.
On some operation you had a few years ago, over 50% of bankruptcies, are because of health care bills. The people aren't insured enough. Even the co-payments and deductibles can put people under these days. So getting those bills negotiated down can help you a lot. And again, healthcareadvocates.com, 215-735-7711 can help you get those under control.
And of course, we know that insurance companies are negotiating all the time to pay a lower. Yeah,
but they have much more leverage than you as an individual.
Right.
And so these people have been doing it for a long, long time. But I find a lot of people are very intimidated by the whole process of trying to negotiate down health care bills. But, I mean, they've already given the operation. There's nothing – it's not secured. They're not going to take your hip back out of you or something, you know.
Right.
So it's an unsecured debt in a certain way, and therefore they're willing to settle for less. Just the average person doesn't know how to do it.
Jordan Goodman of MoneyAnswers.com. Always good about returning an email. If you got a specific question, follow up at MoneyAnswers.com. Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you so much, Bill.
News Radio WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. What is private anymore? I just ask you the question as you're driving in the car. What is private? Did you send something online this morning already? So it's not private, right? Or is it? Well, there's a lady that's aside this morning in the studio that we're going to spend some time with on this and some other issues. Our friend Catherine Bosley, you've seen her for years on TV, and it's good to see you, first of all.
Oh, great to be here. Great to be here.
Let me backtrack a little bit. You've got a book coming out, and it's really about your story.
It is.
And how you were affected,
right?
Which a lot of people will know or not know, but you're going to lay it out in the book, right, as far as privacy. Let's talk about that first.
It is a heck of a book. It's 310 pages long. We're hoping to get it out by the end of the year, looking for the right publisher, my agent and I. Mm-hmm. But if you remember back in 2003 into 2004, my name kind of became infamous. I had an incident where pictures and video of me went out online that never should have, from a moment that was kind of meant for me and my husband, and for a moment out in Key West. Yes, I cut loose. I did something stupid. I took part in a wet T-shirt contest, only thinking that it was meant then, again, for the people there, for my husband there.
Right.
I had just recovered and found out that I'm going to live after suffering a serious lung disease. So we were in
Which may not be a part of the story people know.
Right,
because,
exactly.
You know, you come through something like that, okay, let me just chill for just a second and enjoy life.
Exactly. Huh? I absolutely stepped out of character. I mean, I've always done what I was supposed to do. I've never gone outside the lines. And we were there, and there are what T-shirt contests? They're trying to get people involved. I've never been seen one. And my husband and I are laughing, and we're celebrating our one-year anniversary. We're celebrating survival of a lung disease. And I said, wouldn't that be funny?
Let's make a memory.
Go. Exactly. Boy, did we make a memory.
Right.
Now,
so,
back then, cell phones couldn't do with pictures what they could do today. So I wasn't really worried about that. I didn't know, however, that there were two professional companies there working for their websites until a year later when I came back home. I wanted to leave it in Key West. What I did, I understood was stupid, and I was very regretful about it. And we get home, and a year later, apparently those websites have my pictures up, and someone recognized it, and my whole world blew up. It blew up to the point of I lost my job. I became number one on major search engines, beating out the likes of Paris Hilton and Britney Spears, to my horror, of course, because it was the most embarrassing and regretful moment of my life now that everybody was seeing.
And unlike the other two you mentioned who just want to continue to go on and on and on.
Right.
But that's my opinion. That's okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
It's your story, not mine.
Right. So all of a sudden, I'm getting phone calls from Good Morning America, Inside Edition, The R. Wiley Factor. I was David Letterman's top 10 list. It was awful. And I was seriously on the edge of suicide. It seemed to be my only escape at the time. I had nowhere to go. And I always promised if I could get through that, I would make it count. And something rose up inside me to fight back eventually.
So this story is what you're writing about in Bare Facts.
This is what
which
the Bare
had
Facts
to be therapeutic as well.
Absolutely.
I'm guessing.
Okay. It was absolutely. I mean, it's been in the works for years. I've been jotting down my thoughts as we were going through the whole thing for years. Eventually, got the strength to fight back, and three federal lawsuits later, I regained control of my life. I was able to get the copyrights to all those pictures and images, so I had them taken down and stopped them from being disseminated any further. And we actually ended up suing also Larry Flint and Hustler magazine. They decided to put a picture of me in their magazine after it all.
When did the journalist part of you kick in? Was there ever a time when you thought emotionally, okay, I'm a pro, this is something I need to look into?
It took a little while, actually, for it to kick in. Suddenly, I realized what it was like to have the camera turned on me and how it felt to be ambushed by the media and how it felt to see how the media can turn the story often into kind of story that they want it to be. So as I started to kind of think about all that, I realized that I needed to get out the message that I want to get out, which is basically, listen, we have no privacy out there anymore. There's nothing that you can do outside of your own four walls that you can just assume is not going to be photographed somehow by someone and maybe posted somewhere. And you never know what's going to happen to you in public. You know, a mom has a little meltdown in a grocery store with her kid, you know, a skirt blows up while you're walking down the street. You just never know what's going to happen. So I guess what I'm trying to do here with my website, KatherineBosley.com, is to raise awareness on these possibilities we have out there. So my work is really specializing in our lack of privacy as well as the importance of protecting yourself online and with your social media image, which can make or break you.
WTAM 1100, this is Bill Wills. Good morning, Steve Glador, editor of Cleveland Magazine on the hotline. Hello, friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, buddy. I tweeted at you on Saturday because I was looking over your list of the Power 100, and I just kind of wondered how you came up with the list, and it was an interesting list of who's who around Cleveland. So it's in the latest edition of the magazine. Tell me how you came up with the list, first of all.
Sure. So since we've been doing this, we start with the list. So last year's Power 100, we send out a survey, and we ask them, you know, who gained power in the last year, who lost power in the last year, what people should we be watching, you know, what people are on the rise, those kind of things. And then once we tabulate their survey, we go back and look through the news of the last year, you know, who's retired, whose company's had a big year, who's really made an impact in the community. And that's kind of the judgment that we use in this list.
How do we define power?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I think, you know, a lot of people have different definitions of it. And the way that we see it through several lenses. So what impact do you have on the community? We look at, you know, the corporations that these people lead and, you know, what kind of salaries are they putting out there? You know, we see people who can get things done. And I think that that's an important thing, too. Who's the person that you call when you need to get things done? And so I think those are the kind of lenses that we're looking at when we're looking at power in Cleveland.
I just circled a few on the list there. As I said, these are all Snyder's friends, basically. Paul Dolan, for obvious reasons. Dan Gilbert, obvious reasons. Chris Ronan, great guy over University Circle. Toby Cosgrove, a who's who. As you put together the top five, though, a couple of sports, Let me start with Dave Gilbert. Obviously a guy that has meant a lot to the community through the Sports Commission, right?
Yeah, and I think the other thing that we know him from is from Destination Cleveland. I think that, you know, the travel industry, especially post-RNC and leading up to the RNC, has really changed this community. They've done such a great job of making the city easy for tourists to come and have a good time. I mean, when you end up on National Geographic Traveler's list of best places to see this year, you know you're doing things right. And I think that that's really a testament to what they've done over at Destination Cleveland. And wrapped into that, you know, like we're going to have the NCAA Division I Wrestling Championships here in a month or so. And I think that those things are really awesome to see what's happening in Cleveland from a sports perspective. And Dave Gilbert really has a lot to do with that.
Dan Gilbert, who owns the Cavs at number 11, a guy that plays for him is LeBron James. He comes in at number 4.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I think that LeBron brought us a championship, and so that's going to put him up there pretty high. But I think, you know, the other thing that we look at for LeBron is really he's been an outspoken advocate and really about making change, you know, wearing a quality on his shoes. And you know, what he's done with his foundation to try and make Northeast Ohio a better place is really impressive, just as impressive as what he does on the basketball court.
Mayor Frank Jackson, number 3, obvious reasons. But let me get to 2 and 1. Number yep. 2 first. Beth Mooney, the chairwoman, and I think that is a key word. Sadly, even nowadays, still, when it's someone of her stature heading a corporation like KeyCorp, sadly, it's still news when a woman is doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, she was the first woman CEO of a top 30 U.S.-led bank. She was just named Banker of the Year by American Banker magazine. And, you know, a lot of that's for the good work that she's done. She was really instrumental in a takeover merger with First Niagara Financial Group, which was about $4.1 billion takeover, which has really moved them into New York. And, you know, she's really just so civically involved to, if you look at the boards across town, she's on the most influential boards in town. And really, since she's come to town, made a difference here in Cleveland.
Absolutely. Okay, now, number 1 on your list, and this is news, I guess, Ron Richard, President and CEO over at the Cleveland Foundation.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, Ron's been in our top 25, top 30 for a number of years. And, you know, I think it really just goes to show how important these foundations are in Northeast Ohio, and especially the Cleveland Foundation. They gave out 4,400 grants in 2016 at $93.6 million, and they have their hand in just about every project you can think of, from the Public Square to Irishtown Bend to things from behind the scenes work in the school district. You know, when Mayor Jackson was putting together his initiative to help the lesser in Cleveland, the Cleveland Foundation was at the table for that. And I think that that's, you know, really a testament to what they're doing here. So, you know, with a mayor's transformation initiative, neighborhood transformation initiative, the Cleveland Foundation was a part of that. And I think that, you know, not just the money that they're putting out there, but also the way that they're kind of leading the discussion in Northeast Ohio about green space and energy and school reform, I think that that's where you see a lot of the influence that Cleveland Foundation and Ron Richard have in the community.
Did Snyder, tell me he was 101 maybe.
101.
Okay, that's what I thought. He should be in the top 100, but that's beside the point. Good list. Steve Glador, Cleveland Magazine, thanks for the time.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
News Radio, WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills on Your Money, and let's try and learn something. Fun list Kevin Myroff at NCA Financial Planners came up with, and I know I'm going to learn something because you're going to quiz me on 10 things about money. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning, Bill.
All right, let's go through these. Number 1, we're talking about a penny, huh?
Yeah, I want to know how much a penny costs to manufacture.
I'm going to guess it's over a penny. I'll say a cent and a half.
2.4 cents. 2.4 cents. So there's been lots of conversation about getting rid of pennies. Well, we're going broke printing them.
That shows you how the world is upside. It's costing more. The world is upside down. It costs more to make a penny than a penny. Wow.
Exactly.
All right, lottery tickets. This is an interesting stat. Run this by us here.
Okay, so 5% of the people that buy lottery tickets, so okay. Just 5%.
5%.
Guess what percent of all tickets are sold to them?
I'm going to go high, 90?
51.
51.
5% of the people buy 51% of all tickets sold.
Interesting. All right, now you've got another stat here. We're going through 10 stats about money. Fun stuff here with Kevin Myroff. Gambling this time, huh?
Yeah. The question is, Does gambling generate more or less revenue than movies?
Okay, see, I think movies would generate more, but I'm interested, so I'll say gambling.
And gambling is right. As a matter of fact, it generates more revenue than movies, spectator sports, theme parks, cruise ships, and recorded music combined.
Wow. That's
a total
amazing.
Of $34.6 billion.
That's amazing.
Generated by gambling.
All right. Another interesting stat you came across. I always wondered about this. I'm carrying some cash. What else am I carrying on that cash, huh?
Yeah. What percent of bills are contaminated with bacteria?
I'm guessing every bill, 100%'s got something on it.
It's, well, 94% are contaminated. Only 7% of the germs are actually bad. But like when you don't have enough hands and you put one of those dollars in your mouth, don't do that anymore.
Don't do that. Yeah, don't do that. Don't lick your lip, your fingers and do, yeah, no. All right, Kevin Myra, five more little stats here about money. Let's play Monopoly money this time. What's the question?
Is more money produced by Monopoly every year or by the U.S. government?
I'm going to go U.S. government on this one.
No.
No.
$50 billion produced by Monopoly and only $1 billion produced by the government.
Really? Well, we lose that Monopoly money all the time. There's never the right amount, it seems like, in the game.
Yeah, it really isn't worth $50 billion, but it's a good stat.
That's a good. I like that. Okay, largest denomination. What's the question here?
Yeah, so currency. Okay. What's the largest bill? I mean, I know you've seen a 5, a 10, yeah. a 20, a 100.
Yeah.
What's the largest bill ever produced?
I saw 100 back on graduation day, I think, the last time I saw 100 back in high school. $5,000 bill? Is there one?
There was at one point, but the largest bill ever produced was in 1934-35. It was a $100,000 gold certificate, and it was mainly used for transferring between banks when they were doing transactions.
Oh, okay.
But there is a $100,000 bill.
Wow, interesting. Okay, now counterfeit is obviously a problem. You got a question here about that. What is this stat now?
Yeah, I mean, which country do you think is the largest counterfeiter of U.S. currency? As a matter of fact, this country does it almost perfectly.
Which country is the largest counter? I'll go Mexico.
No, North Korea.
North Korea? Now, that's surprising. That's interesting.
How about that? They make perfect replicas of our $50 and $100 bills.
Very interesting. Okay, Secret Service question here. What you got?
Yeah. Why was the Secret Service, what were they established to do? What's their job?
I'm guessing something with money, because that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, most okay. people say what? It's to protect the president.
Right.
But that's not why they were established. Back in 1865, they were established to fight counterfeiting. And to this day, they still do that. That is still their job, along with protecting the president.
Good point. We think about, you know, every Secret Service agent's around the president, but indeed it's money. Okay. Allowances. What you got? What's the question here?
The average allowance in the U.S. for a child.
I thought you were going to ask for a husband, but let's go kid. The average allowance in the U.S. a month. $20.
Okay, I'm going to say this quietly because I don't want my kids to hear. $65 a month.
Get out of here.
Based on a recent study.
And that's the average.
That's the average.
60. Oh, to be a kid again. okay, food and money. What's the question?
Yeah, how much money do you think Americans spend on fast food?
Oh, geez. It's got to be in the billions. $2 billion a
year? $117 billion is spent on fast food. $800 million is spent on Girl Scout cookies, $500 million on Twinkies, $11 billion for coffee, $2.3 billion on tattoos, $2.6 billion on toilet paper, just to round it up there for you.
Well, look, now I know that the kid's making at least $65 a month. Have your kid pay next time you're driving through fast food, that's for sure. Good list. Fun stuff. Kevin Myroff at NCA Financial Planners. Thanks, pal.
You bet. Have a great week, everybody.
Two in a row. Your morning Cavaliers update brought to you by Huntington, what a bank that believes in looking out for its customers. Welcome to Huntington. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside. John Michael called it last night. He'll call it again tomorrow night in Detroit again when they'll play the Pistons. LeBron with 25 last night, guys. 121-104 win. John, let me start with you. What was different last night? What did you see different out of the team to get the win? John? Well, I would ask John. Where did John go? John, are you there? John is not there. Mike, what did you see different?
What did I see different last night? I saw Isaiah Thomas play his best game, at least best stretch of action in the third quarter. I saw a little more togetherness in just terms of really supporting each other, Bill. And that may seem like a trivial thing when you think about, my gosh, somebody texted me earlier, all the money they make, they can't play like they're having fun. But that's part of it. You need to have some fun in this game. And in the second quarter, when Channing Frye had a putback dunk, drunk, the bench erupted like I hadn't seen in quite some time.
Well, and we've talked about this point. John Michael is now with us about what was different last night in the win, because let's face it, last week there was even the coach question, agendas and all. And,
exactly.
And John, they were having fun last night, looked like.
Yeah, they really did. You could point to that Kyle Korver drive along the baseline as well, and it looked like he'd shoot the three, and he tiptoed around Bullock to the basket. That led to a Stan Van Gundy timeout, and the bench loved that one too as well, Michael. I thought the difference, Bill, was that they closed the game. You know, I mean, we've seen teams come back on the Cavaliers in the second half out of the Cavs' defense in the fourth quarter, locked down on a Piston team that was playing on the tail end of a back-to-back and basically smothered them right out of the ball game. So to see this team close out the show, you know, we've seen, like I said, teams come from behind on the Cavaliers. That fourth quarter defense had struggled. Defensively, they lock it down for the most part. They choked out the Pistons. Hopefully they can do the same thing tomorrow night as we head off to Detroit.
Key stretch of the game was in that third quarter, John. I thought Detroit was on the verge of going up by seven. I think Kennard missed a layup. Cavs went back the other end. And Isaiah Thomas, they were ready to take him out. Derrick Rose was at the scorer's table, but play continued, and Isaiah got into his best groove, I thought, in terms of minutes since we've seen him as a Cav. What are your thoughts?
Mike, I thought that was the biggest four-point swing of the game. I mean, Kennard was right at the doorstep. He missed the bunny. And then I think it was a Thomas layup down the other end that made that four-point swing, and Isaiah started cooking. I mean, you'd like to see the assists up like they were for Isaiah last night. The comfort level continues to increase. You know, not just in his shooting, not just in his ability, but also his relationship with LeBron, moving the ball, getting it back and forth. And I thought his step was even quicker, Mike. I mean, that step gets quicker each and every game. When you're a player like Isaiah at 5'9", I mean, that quickness obviously is critical. And I think if you ask him, he'd tell you it hasn't been exactly where he needs it to be. But we see it getting better and better. We see the results getting better and better. I mean, his shooting percentage continues to gradually increase, and you get to closer to where he wants it. So I think it means good signs for this team. We knew it was going to take a while. I mean, the integration of Isaiah into this team and others as well wasn't going to be easy. Wouldn't happen overnight. But hopefully, Mike, slowly but surely, as we close out this month of January, the Cavs can pick up a couple more wins, move on into February in the All-Star break, starting to feel a little bit better about themselves and getting into a semblance of a groove that they can rely on and look back to once we get into the marches in the April and on into the playoffs.
Well, hopefully that'll be the case. They'll take it on the road tomorrow. You know, John, you touched on it at the beginning. The Pistons really cooled down from beyond the three-point line. Part of that was the Cavs getting closer to them defensively. And so often it seems, if you really look at stats and you look at what the Cavs do from beyond the arc in three-point shooting compared to what their opponents do, that'll so often, it seems like with this team, tell you what that result of the game was.
Well, you're right, Mike. Particularly, I mean, the Cavs, we know it. The Cavs shoot so many three-point shots. I mean, they've been in the top three now for the last three seasons, basically. And now, you know, coming into last game, their three-point percentage had slid all the way to 14th. That number was 2 last year. They were second in the league in three-point percentage only to San Antonio, and we've seen that number dive, basically, throughout this month of January. And what's happened? The Cavs have accumulated a lot of L's. You lose games when you shoot the three-point ball that much, and you're having that little success. So to see that number pick up yesterday was strong. And also, you know, defending the three. When we harken back to the first dozen games, Mike, in which the Cavs went 5-7, that was the biggest issue. I mean, the Cavs were giving up loads of threes. They solved that problem. You know, and lo and behold, they win 19 out of their next 21 games, and then that's starting to leak back in here defensively over the last couple of weeks. So it's no accident, Mike, and I think you're exactly right. That is one of the most critical stats for this particular Cavs team, the way they play the game, and the numbers have played out in terms of the wins and losses, really, Mike, throughout the entire season.
John Michael, more tonight, Cavs HQ, 7 o'clock on News Radio, WTAM 1100, home of the Cavaliers. Jim Jones this time tomorrow previews Cavs Pistons round 2 in Detroit. All right, thanks, John.
All right, guys, have a good week.
All right, let's talk Grammys, or should we call these the Bruno Mars Invitational Party, Jason Nathanson? Big night for him, huh?
How about the Marsies?
I like that. Little,
there we go.
I like that.
Going for 6 for 6, Bruno Mars, Song of the Year, Record of the Year, Album of the Year. Of course, those are the big three. He swept those categories, which was a surprise to a lot of people. Maybe some people thought he'd win Album of the Year. A lot of people thought Kendrick Lamar actually deserved it, but that he and Jay-Z might split some of that vote among the rap fans of the Academy. And that Bruno Mars might sneak in there, which it looks like he did. But Song of the Year and Record of the Year, nobody was predicting that.
People talking about the Open, the performances, typical night for the Grammys, right?
Yeah, for sure. Kendrick Lamar opened things off and with a lot of social commentary, which is what his song is and his album is. And a lot of people thought because of this moment, that was a fitting album, his album Damn, to win for Best Album. But instead, it went to the more popular choice. And, you know, you can't find anybody who doesn't like Bruno Mars. He's the popular choice in terms of album sales, for sure. Everybody loves him. He's the safe choice. But a lot of people felt some of the edgier stuff, like Kendrick Lamar, yeah, or like a Kesha, that they deserve to win.
Performances. I there were a lot of good things. I thought the Brothers Osborne, Mary Morris, Eric Church, where they did the tribute to those that had passed, that was a moving thing. That was really good.
That was, and they did Tears in Heaven while the names of all the people who had died in Las Vegas and Manchester played behind them on the screen. That was definitely very touching.
And finally, speaking of touching, Hillary reading Fire and Fear. That was funny. That was a funny bit, I thought.
I thought it was very funny, especially Cardi B's response to all the stuff that was going on in the book was hilarious. But a lot of people, and you know, you can't really fault them, people like Nikki Haley who wrote on Twitter, "Don't ruin great music with trash."
Right.
Some of us love music without the politics thrown in. I understand that as well. You know, if you're politically on one side and you see all these people, music is supposed to be kind of a great equalizer. We're all just supposed to be able to listen in our car and just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And last, when you interject politics, it doesn't allow some people to be able to enjoy it.
Hey, Nikki, that horse left the barn years ago. Grammy's always doing politics. All right. That's Jason true. Nathanson, thanks, pal.
All right, take care.